March 29, we will be celebrating 15 years of the internet, right? So it's not the exact date, but it was the date 15 years ago, March 29, 1994, we had the first live link to the US by a consortium. So who were those people?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that was the PHNet consortium.
The PHNet
consortium. So the consortium was mainly led by the DOST, and there were a couple of schools like UP, Ateneo, La Salle, and there was a commercial company who joined, the MOSCOM, okay, Mosaic Communications.
Yeah,
they're still around.
Yeah, MOSCOM is still around.
Yeah, so they were all sharing that 64 kilobits per second link.
So the first US link was actually 64 kilobits per second.
Yeah, that's right.
So
what? How can you do it 64 kilobits per second?
Dude, that
well,
was
remember the internet back then was mostly text.
What was
that? Was mostly text.
Okay. Yeah. Well, text
email.
Of email, okay.
1994. I'm already aware of the internet then, because although I wasn't able to access the internet until 1995, the year after, came out commercially. Because I remember my first time to access the internet was not at home, but through an internet cafe in Greenbelt 1. In Greenbelt 1, I remember that. And I was using, I can't recall kung magkano the cost per hour. It was something like 70 or something.
Ouch!
Yeah, 1995. I can't recall, but it's less than 100 pesos per hour.
I was surprised it was less than 100.
Well, 100, well, less 70 pesos in 1995.
Yeah,
I guess.
But I really recall that time because although it was my first time to use the internet, it wasn't my first time to actually read about it or even know about it. Because, everyone goes to book sale, right? And they all have these magazines and stuff.
Really?
Yeah. And they
everyone?
Well, most people I know. So, every cheapskate like me that likes $1 books. Okay, so I remember. I don't know if I still have it at home. I purchased back issues ng the Net magazine and even Word. Mm. They had Word back then, so puro back issues. So, and they had articles like The Well, and I don't know. Mix, have you heard of The Well? Of course you do.
Yes. So it was one of the more influential online communities.
Yeah, that was back then. And
the whole Earth. The whole Earth
and I had this computer Subaha. It was a Pentium or even a 486. I can't recall, but it already had a web browser, at least Netscape Navigator, Gold or something. But that magazine in the Net had a CD-ROM, and they featured websites offline. So in a way, kahit I wasn't connected at home, I was at least able to experience hypertext. When I went to that internet cafe, it was like second nature to me.
Oh, the real thing.
Yeah, so the real thing. But the only thing I did was actually look for pictures, and that's it.
Ah, what kind of pictures?
He was in the cafe.
Don't tell me it was porn. The internet of the cafe is gonna look at
it. But what were you using back then? What browser? Was that Mosaic back then?
I know it was Mosaic, yeah. I remember it was Mosaic. But some of the computers back then already had at least Netscape, not yet Navigator Gold, because Navigator Gold was really good. I think there were early versions of Netscape. Yeah,
Netscape 2, I think.
Yeah, Netscape 2 or something. And 64. And I recall, Migs, that was 64 kilobits, right? 1994,
jeez. Well, if you were accessing it in 95 and in Greenbelt, that was probably another company already who set up a separate connection to the US. Okay, yeah, it's not, I don't think that would have been the PHNet. It's possible, but it's depending on the date. The next batch of ISPs came around July or so. That's when some companies went online, like Globe went online. Then IBM actually had its own ISP back then. Then we had the biggest and most famous then, the SQLNet, which was later bought by PLDT.
SQL, yeah.
Infocom?
Yeah, the one that was bought, and yeah, it became Infocom. It was already Infocom from the start, but they were using the brand SQLNet.
SQLNet, yeah.
Okay.
Pero, I remember back then when my company, the place that I used to work before, we actually got this lease line, I think 128 kilobits, and it cost something like $2,500. Something like that, around 96.
Hmm. Ah, probably. Yeah, that was not a dedicated line
it's
to the
not,
US.
Yeah.
It
goes
share.
To.
It's just the
yeah.
ISP.
Yeah, but I think we were connected directly to Moscow. So.
Ah, okay, yeah. So, then you were sharing Moscow's connection.
Yeah, so. But that was around 96. 96, 97, something like
yeah,
that.
I think sometime in 95, Moscow already got their own direct connection. So I would say the first 64K of PHNet became like the incubator for the other companies to set up their own connection,
and
they are justified.
But what did those guys use with 64 kilobits? I mean, right now,
email
that's hardly... It's basically nothing right
now. That's mostly email. I distinctly remember that time as well because my mother was a faculty member of DLSU. So in 1994, that was when she started using email extensively for communicating with my aunts in the US. So I could remember that it was DOS terminal pa ata, some old version of Pegasus Mail or Pegasus Mail. And then I distinctly remember mga 95-96. Nag-setup kami ng tawag dito ng 486 na computer. This was the first. Kasi before that, XT yung PC na sa bahay. It was so old. Tawag dito. Nag-setup kami ng 486. Yes, it was an XT, PC XT.
Did you park the drives?
I didn't have a hard drive. It was all floppy. So alam mo yung panahon na dalawang floppy drives?
So
the next one we had was a 486. It was a set of Windows, and then I had this first na modem ko was a 14.4 kbps na tawag dito US robotics pa galing pa sa US yun, handed down to us.
Yeah, those were really good. I mean, yung US robotics modems. I remember vividly when we had our lease line connections sa office. So we had two branches. One is in Laguna and one is in Makati, and we already had webcams. Okay.
What?
Yep. Those were pretty expensive back then, but we were already using it. We were using software like NetMeeting, Microsoft NetMeeting.
So
pretty much it shows how far we've gone today. 15 years ago, the first 64 kilobit line was connected direct to the US, and I just don't know if what did they really, well, they obviously use it for email and things like that, but after that there was actually an explosion of online services. Well, it wasn't really an explosion, pero yung uptake of usage was going there. I remember nga yun nga yung internet cafe sa Green Hills. It wasn't exactly a cafe. I distinctively recall a cafe called Siberia, if anyone remembers that.
Yeah, there was a... I've never been there, but it was known to be a very expensive internet cafe.
Yeah, so before, they used to have Siberia in London, and they actually set up shop in Makati. I think sa Pasay Road yata, yun eh. So I just don't know if what happened over that, but it was interesting. But Mix, I recall that you were one of the people, well, not, I don't know if one of the people, but you were there from the start when commercialization of the internet started in the Philippines, right?
Yeah, back in 95, our ISP went live. We were working on it since late 94. Then we went online in June 95.
Well, the reason why that started was because nag-start yung direct link from the US, right? So, of course...
Yeah. So that's why I said it was the incubator, because they started, and then my partners and my principals thought we could do better than this. I mean, they have a lousy, like, so and so ISP has a lousy service because they're just riding on PHNet. I think we could do better. And well, I guess we did in some way.
What was the name of that ISP again? For those who don't know,
right.
It was called iFill Communications.
Okay.
Yeah, it was so iFill.
Just 11 years ago, yon, in 1994. Or 15 years ago.
15 years ago.
I was 11 then. I was in Laguna. Right, so in Laguna, so kasi kayo, nandito ako sa Manila nun, so you were in the thick of the action. 11 years old in Laguna, I remember nagkaroon ng Laguna.net.
Oh,
Laguna.net.
I know the owner.
You know the owner. Yeah, so, the parang owner. around 96 ba? 97 yata yon? Or somewhere around that time frame.
So, I know Laguna so, well kasi yun nga, yung locator namin was located at the Technopark. And there were two parties there. Baylink.
Uh-huh.
And Laguna.net.
Yeah. So Laguna.net was the first exposure I had with internet. Pero hindi pa sa bahay namin. Kasi at that time, wala pang phone line sa Laguna, doon sa town namin. So, the first time I got internet access at home was around 2001? I was already
either your place had telephone lines, but they were not the proper lines that are capable of using the internet.
No. So we didn't have PLDT. Period.
I see. Okay.
At that time, so I the first time I got a hold of the internet was through an internet cafe in high school. Then, so I. Internet cafe din, pero I was in high school at that time sa UP Rural, sa loob ng UP campus pa nun. So, the first thing I remember doing back then, I was second year high school.
So what
first year high school.
So what did you check out? The time is...
Pictures. Yeah, I first set up an email account. So I found out about IRC, and then I started chatting on IRC. So that was the big thing back then. Yahoo Mail. I don't know if there was already Messenger back then. I don't think so.
Wala pero ICQ.
ICQ. ICQ. I remember I had an ICQ account. So.
So. Yeah, but that was like late 90s na yun eh.
Late 90s.
But the services I used before were primarily IRC. Yung World Wide Web wasn't, well, it was okay. Kasi they already had Mosaic. The cafes already also have clients for Gopher and Veronica, I believe. Because they work with each other, if I recall correctly.
What is Veronica?
It started with Archie.
It started with Archie, yeah. Then there was Veronica. Wikipedia can tell us. Pero those were actually...
That was the time when the people used standalone Unix tools.
But those are actually... Veronica is actually a search engine. So Gopher, if I recall properly, is actually a protocol.
Right.
I think the Gopher protocol was a flat file. It was basically an index or a document. And there were actually browsers that I still think they still support Gopher as a protocol.
Really?
Yeah.
How do you spell Gopher? Gopher.
G-O-F-E-R? The animal.
No.
P-H-E-R.
G-O-P-H-E-R. And then, anyway, you can try it.
Anyway.
So, and when I started working around 95, IBM started coming in with OS2 Warp. Then OS2 Warp was the browser. I recall when Windows 95 came out, it didn't have IE back then, but OS2 came out and it already had the Warp browser. And the Warp browser was using all these protocols, not just the HTTP gateways. Yeah, the rest is history for me for that one. And eventually, I signed up for a Hotmail account, and that's it.
Do you guys remember EDSAMAIL?
Ah, the original
EDSAMAIL. So,
oh wow, that is nostalgic.
So for those who don't know, EDSAMAIL was actually this free email service, but this was like late 90s, na din eh. It was this free dial-up email service. So EDSAMAIL basically provided an email address and a dial-up number where you can dial in for free and get your email. So it's not HTTP, it's not WWW. The only protocol was actually SMTP and POP. But they provided this installer, CD installer, CD na eh. They provided the CD installer, and you install it to your machine, and you get basically a free email.
That was such a big thing back then.
Yep,
it free.
I mean, back then Yahoo Mail was what, 2 MB lang or 1 MB lang yung ano?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think it was 3 MB. I think Yahoo Mail before started with something like 5 MB.
Ano pwede mo gamitin? So uso pa yung you had multiple emails because you needed all that space. I mean, kapag you sorted your emails, like when you forward something and it was moderately large, something like a few 100 KB, you had to forward it to your other email so that you'd free up space in this one. Ganun pa no.
Inabot ko na was 5 MB.
Yeah, I think it was 5 MB. Pero I recall before it wasn't Yahoo email, it was Rocket Mail. Then Yahoo actually Yahoo purchased Rocket Mail and it became Yahoo Mail. So if you were actually one of those who signed up for Yahoo for a long, long, long time, you probably still have Rocket Mail. Then yung Hotmail, I signed up for Hotmail. It wasn't MSN yet. Hotmail pa lang siya. It was only recent lang yung binili nilang. Kasi Hotmail back then was using BSD servers. Then when Microsoft bought Hotmail, they had this transition going to Microsoft servers and hell went loose.
Hell broke loose.
So, yeah, but anyway, go.
Iba pa yung spelling.
Hotmail.
Yung spelling ng Hotmail, no? Was HTML. Capital HTML.
Yeah, because it was HTML. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay. So, ngayon na-get ko na bakit Hotmail. HTML, okay.
Yeah,
fine.
Yeah. So Hotmail, it was HTML. It was HTML.
Fine.
Yeah. And then the other things that going back to the experience ko with browsing the web with a CD-ROM because of .net mag, the net, not .net, the net magazine. Let me recall that. It also had plugins. So hindi pa real player nun eh. Although there was actually real player na from the start. I don't know if Mix tried these things. Like, I think Flash before wasn't really made by Adobe. It was made by a company. But there was this company.
Macromedia.
Macromedia.
Macromedia. But Macromedia bought it from someone too. Because I recall I have this future Splash plugin. And there was.
Oh, yeah. That was. No, it was Shockwave first.
Yeah, Shockwave.
Shockwave.
I remember.
Shockwave.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. So Shockwave. Yung ano natin, tema
natin. Nostalgia.
So Shockwave. So Shockwave, I had to install that plugin so I can actually look into a lot of multimedia stuff. And then, and of course, meron din nung VRML.
VRML? What? Teka,
virtual reality.
I think I need to Google that.
Yeah, virtual reality modeling language.
What?
Oh, virtual reality was a big word. Was a big word back then. I mean, in the late 90s, you even had that movie.
Ano yung yeah, movie? There was this
Russell Crowe and Desmond Virtuosity.
There was
everybody.
Lawnmower Man.
That's another one.
But I think.
Tapos meron pa nang isa eh. Libro ni Michael Crichton, yung about sexual harassment stuff. Merong
disclosure.
Yeah, that one. So may headset na parang may virtual reality interface to a database.
Yeah, that was
Disclosure
with. Demi Moore.
Michael Douglas. Yes.
Demi Moore is active on Twitter.
Oh, now she is, right?
Yeah, so... Yeah. That was a long... Anyway, so... Yeah, they had this...
Follow her?
I follow her.
Oh, you do?
How about Ashton Kutcher?
I follow him too. Anyway,
okay.
How the internet has evolved.
So I remember another thing that was actually interesting with the internet, because back then, when I started using it, the first thing that I did was actually well look for stuff using Mosaic or Netscape Navigator. Netscape Navigator was actually a whole suite. Hindi lang siya yung web browser. Yes. But the thing is that you had to buy Netscape before. Either it's bundled with your machine or you have to buy it.
And then the best
one is actually Netscape Gold, Netscape Navigator Gold, because it even had the email client and the markup editor.
News group browser of some sort.
So NNTP.
Yeah,
so meron nun. I think the email client and the markup editor, which was really big. Kasi when I was getting those net back issues, they had this section of teaching you some basic HTML. And one of the most popular back then on teaching HTML or even anything web related was Linda. Linda.com.
Linda?
Let me check.
What year was this?
That was around mid-90s. And mid-90s. Then when I started doing web work, HTML mostly. So if you go at Linda.com, she was one of the first original trainers of anything that is web-related. She's a very, very popular author. And then around 97... or 96.
Linda. L-Y-N-D-A.
Yeah. Around 96 or 97, I actually had access to Front Page. Microsoft Front Page.
Oh, Vermeer Technologies.
Okay.
Vermeer Technologies.
But it wasn't Microsoft back then. Yeah. I think earlier than that, yun nga, yung Vermeer Technologies, because that was bought by Microsoft and it became part of Office. No, it wasn't actually part of Office, but an extension to Office. Yeah, and that was the time that I actually learned how to do things dynamically. It wasn't really real dynamic, like dynamic web programming right now, pero at least I was able to do something with an Access database and put the result on a web browser.
Ooh.
That was a big thing. But in reality, that was doing it on IIS, okay? As early as that.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And...
What programming language was it back then?
It was a Common Gateway Interface.
CGI Perl.
So, merong mga ganun. So, I had to learn some CGI, I had to learn some Perl just to make it work.
Did you have blink tags?
Markup?
The marquee came much later. Ang nauna talaga yung blink. I remember learning about blink in around 96-97. I put up my first website. It was in GeoCities.
Wow.
Yeah. And ang ginamit ko for reference noon was Web Monkeys. There was this Web Monkeys tutorial.
Yes,
Wired. Yes, Wired. So Wired na na website. Tawag dito. So nagkaroon ako ng site noon sa GeoCities where you had to choose this whatever
neighborhood.
This weird location neighborhood, yeah. And you were given a weird number for your, so your URL is just very long.
You join a community number. In GeoCities, then your site can have this kind of look and feel and things like that.
Yeah, precisely. But that was my first HTML experience then. Wala pang marquee noon. It was blink. It was everything was blinking on my website when I... that was the only way you could animate anything sa HTML at that time.
And did you have nice textured backgrounds? GIF
what?
Backgrounds? GIF files as your background images. GIF.
Wow. Animated.
GIF na animated or tawag dito, yung repeating. Yung
right. I remember that file, Doc whacking the computer.
meron pa rin ngayon ng ganun eh. They still use for forum avatars. But anyway, I mean, going back to my experience, it was my first work of doing web development. And I actually went to national bookstores sa Makati. And I was able to buy this book by James Gosling. Okay, so Vix probably knows this. It was the pre-release
version the first of Java book. Yeah.
The first Java book. Java was still in pre-release version. So they had a lot of these applets. I think the popular one was still the teacup applet, just for testing. And mga bouncing balls and things like that. And it was really fun because applets were pretty useless back then. But still, it was actually very interesting to do that because if you show someone with your resume, you say you can do web development, and they will ask, have you done applets? Yes, I've done applets. So even though it's useless. So that came the time that people were actually putting music into their websites.
Oh, yeah.
MIDI files. Or not even MIDI files.
Not even MIDI files.
But you required Java. You required something to put into Java. But mm-hmm. I think most browsers then, starting with Netscape, I think Netscape started it, they already have support for JavaScript. Because Java and JavaScript came out almost at the same time.
Yes, and there was confusion, right? Yeah, whether Java was big JavaScript.
Well, anyway, we actually had a rolling start, okay, and I wasn't able to properly introduce everyone. This is Pinoy Tech Podcast. I'm Jerome Gotaco. We were actually enjoying the discussion before we started recording about 15 years on the internet. And of course, we have on the panel John Lim Hap, Migs Paras, and Dean Beris.
Hi.
Hey.
Hi.
Yeah, so, medyo nag-iba yung pace natin ngayon. Pero, Migs, di ba, Migs, you started working at iFIL around, well, you're one of the founders of iFIL.
95,
right?
Yeah, 95, right.
What did you guys do to prepare setting up iFIL?
Oh, it took a few months, maybe half a year or more. First of all, the stuff that led me that way was I learned Linux. So I learned how to set up a Linux dial-up server with PPP, with shell accounts. Does anybody remember shell accounts?
I still have them.
We used to offer them back then.
Oh, yeah.
Where you dial up and instead of an IP address, you have a Unix shell, and then people are expected to run Elm and Pine and similar programs.
I used those Unix when I was program. In college, though. So, in UPLB, merong MudSpring accounts. So, yun.
Yeah.
I know they didn't use it, but hanggang ngayon.
No, I don't. Sorry.
But I feel catered to corporate, right?
Yes, we catered to corporate, but we also sold to other ISPs. So we helped set up some ISPs, get started, and some of them eventually left us and got their own connection. Right. I wrote my own billing systems in Perl.
Wow.
So I wrote a lot of Perl. I spent, and back then bandwidth was expensive, so we had to use proxy caches all the time. So I really learned how to tweak Squid proxy cache to the max. And back then, 2 gig of hard drive space was big for a cache, 2 to 5 gig.
So were you doing? Yeah. So were you doing it on digital equipment servers?
No. We were using.
So you were using a white box.
We started on HP PCs. Mm-hmm. Well, one server. I remember we started with one server and one desktop, branded desktop, which we reworked into a server. Then later we went to do build our own white boxes.
But
I remember buying. SCSI cards when they were discrete. I mean, it was a time when you needed to buy SCSI if you wanted reasonable performance on your server. Then, aside from the Linux stuff, I also taught myself some IP networking, how to set up Cisco routers, things like that.
Cisco routers. I remember at my office back then, we had this Cisco. It was a 1U router, but
it's probably the 16, the 1100.
Yeah, I think it was the 1100. I think I still have it at home.
But the thing that
I remember most about using the internet here in the Philippines was that it was actually my gateway to the local technology communities. Okay. I had access to BBS back then, but it was pretty limited. But I think when the internet grew in the Philippines, not really grew, but started, I was already going into chat rooms and things like that. Not even local chat rooms pa nga. Kasi I'm pretty sure people back then who went to chat rooms were also at the cafes, not yet at their homes. That's one thing.
Right.
Then another thing that made me, I think it was a game changer for me, was actually learning about Linux. That was around 97. And we heard of this Walnut Creek CDs that we actually had it purchased from the US. And when it came over, we had 5 or 6 Linux distros already on CD-ROMs because... Although it was back then available by download, but I only had like a 128 kilobit connection at the office, and we were running a lot of things. So the CD-ROMs were the fastest way to do that. And I remember distinctively, I showed a picture. I showed the picture to Mix this via Twitter. I still have that CD-ROM from iPhil.
Linux 99.
Yeah, Linux 99. So we had Internet World back then.
Wow.
Yeah, but you know, even if I did a lot of programming in C back then to hack some, like Squid. I worked on Squid. I worked on Radius. But even before that, back in school, I was doing Turbo C. Okay, like on DOS and 286 machines. No hard drive. But I hear up to now, is that right? Up to now, some people are still using that same Turbo C 2.0?
Not 2.0. No, something newer version. Yeah, actually, I hear people are still learning Turbo C++.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised. Okay, they still have those books in the bookstore, the local prints.
Mm-hmm. No. Actually, my brother-in-law is taking up CompSci in Adamson, and bigla ako na-blast from the past nung pinakita niya sa akin yung ano, yung tawag dito, yung Turbo C terminal dun sa, and he was doing it in my wife's laptop for his assignments, and I was, oh my god, he still learn programming in this, ano, in this language.
I think there's nothing wrong with learning C in college. Ang problem lang was the methodology of doing that. Because, for example, right. Dean is a very, very experienced C++ programmer. I mean, I wouldn't say C++ is an old language because most consoles...
Actually, it is.
It is an old language.
Well, it is, but still,
it is a very, very optimized language, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, most console games are still in C++, as far as I know. Mm-hmm. So, but I think it's the methodology is the problem.
Yeah. So now we're talking about the computer science education, right? So when I was in college, I already learned how to program outside of college. So I was surprised that my first year college in UP Los Baños, we were being taught Pascal, Turbo Pascal at that, as the first language. So, I was going, right, okay, we're learning Pascal, we're learning programming. Mm-hmm.
And you were doing the Towers of Hanoi exercise.
Yes, we were doing that. That was fine. I relearned some of the stuff that I learned outside about Turbo Pascal. But then we jumped to C. And my problem with the education, so there are two things that I'm noticing. First is we're teaching a lot of old, really really old technologies, but you can't blame the educators because that's what they learned first. So the problem I have with So the second problem is it takes a while for students to really pick up, especially if they don't have computers at home, and especially if it's the first time they're going to use a computer. So, I was in the province, and not everyone had a computer back then. And it's really frustrating to explain something that seems really simple to someone who doesn't know. Yeah, it's really hard to explain how, for example, the compiler, how to use the compiler, or how to log in when it's the first time they're actually gonna use a computer. So that's the problem that education should usually face.
But do we still have schools doing that until now? Turbo C?
Doing what?
Which one?
Turbo C.
Yes.
Actually, okay, so just an update. I asked some of my old other previous professors, and now they're teaching
PHP,
GNU C++, and GNU C. They're using GCC now.
But at least that's an improvement.
Yeah,
but that's an UP.
Yeah, but then they're still teaching like really really basic stuff, like how do you print. How do you do this? How do you run the compiler? How do you yada yada? So things that you should be able to pick up on your own outside is still being... So you're spending like lots of time trying to bootstrap these students. And I think that's one of the issues that is really...
It's too bad that Rom isn't online at the moment. He would get a lot of insight on this.
Yeah, he would have a lot.
But remember back then when I was in school, they really had to teach us that because most of the students didn't have computers or it was their first time using a computer. But that was like what before the internet came in the Philippines.
Yeah.
I just don't know. If the curriculum wasn't. I'm sure the curriculum changes, but I'm not sure how frequent.
Not quick, just one line. Rom said something about this. He said the curriculum is updated. It's the implementation that is bad. And the teaching.
Yeah.
All right, continue, please.
Yeah. There's something very fundamental. I mean, the difference natin between us... oldies, quote unquote, who learning. I mean, when we learn programming, and the young ones today, because what you have to understand is back when we were learning programming, we had what DOS terminals, Linux terminals. We started with a command prompt. Everything then was text based, and programming back then was talagang. You have an input something, print something out on the, and you were expecting this console, diba na, this console na 24 by 80 characters that you would work with. Kids right now, their first exposure to computers have turned to internet use, internet, social networks actually.
Right.
And games, Counter-Strike, Dota, WoW, whatever. And tawag, parang ang the concern is we're trying to teach kids right now programming in the context of in a very old context that they do not appreciate and understand because a lot of them haven't seen DOS prompts before. Unlike us, which we were at home when we turned on our computer, we don't see a Win dash screen. We see a DOS prompt. I remember the time nung nag-aral pa ako ng batch programming, just so
bukas
ko computer ko, diretso sa Windows 3.1.
Yeah, I remember that too.
It either goes direct to Windows 3.1, or you have your personalized prompt.
Yes. Yeah, I personalized prompt too.
I made personalized prompts
for my
games. Oh yeah, Hymen.sys because you had to set Hymen.sys to be able to play
Prince of Persia.
And your computer didn't have a floating point processor.
No, not
yeah, a yeah, yeah, yeah. Precisely. So you natin yung context problem na yun. Pangalawa, tawag dito, parang it's very different. I mean, nung time natin, if we make a program that does that, the accept an input, you press enter, there's some sort of output. It's very similar to what programs there are sa mga corporate offices,
yep.
Sa mga back in the days of Clipper, if you remember that, diba? Tawag dito, Clip
Foxpro.
Yung ang mga applications noon was, it's much more difficult to do in Turbo Pascal or Basic the kinds of application that you could do with FoxPro and Clipper, but you could do it. It's possible. Mm-hmm. Ngayon, there's an expectation that any program that you do would look like this napakagandang interface on the web or this very nice UI on Windows. So I feel na yung mga ano yung mga kids, they're like, they can't relate. Pag ano nila nung programming nila, they're still using these old tools na I agree that it's very, very important to start them with the basic, with the very basic programming languages. Pero, yung tawag dito, there should be context. Kailangan mag-move sila. Problema hindi eh. A lot of schools, a lot of computer science schools, they still demand thesis project using Visual Basic 6. But the teachers haven't moved to, I mean, the Microsoft stack yung school, syempre, obviously, they haven't moved to .NET, and .NET is, what, 10 years old? Turning 10 right. This year. So
happy birthday, John.
Given this situation, guys, do you think a computer science degree or at least a programming degree in the country is still attractive to kids? Well,
right. Okay. So, attractive is one thing. If you sell, quote unquote, if you sell computer science as a course that will allow you to do cool things, like come up with a new website, come up with a new game, come up with some funky enterprise application, or make tons and tons of money, and you know, if you sell it that way, yes. Now, the problem becomes, you set that expectation at the start,
mm-hmm.
and then when you come in, you're facing these. So I come from a very theory heavy college in the Institute of Computer Science at UP Los Baños, and I'm thankful for that, because the theory, the background, is very, very important, especially now that I'm working. But back then, when I was studying, I was really just whacking my head and, what are automata? Why am I studying this? What is this going to be good for? Mm-hmm. Right? So, it's a matter of keeping the focus on what actually is relevant. So, when I was in college, I was thankful enough that UP started teaching about web programming. So I learned PHP, I learned JavaScript, I learned HTML, all that funky jazz with Java, and all the good stuff I learned in college. But the actual programming part, the bootstrapping, I was saying earlier, so getting someone to think in terms of making the computer do something, is the time it takes to get from absolutely no knowledge to getting a website up is too long, and I think it shouldn't be that way. I think you should, at first year, you should be able to tell someone, okay, this is how you do it, and do it from a top-down approach.
So, I think it's a matter of putting excitement to the course itself and to the industry, because right now everything is mainstream. Video games are mainstream, websites are mainstream, e-commerce is mainstream. So what would be the next one? So that's the question. And and another thing is that right now, I mean, everyone is, a few weeks ago we were talking in the earlier editions of the podcast, the internet is pretty much mainstream, especially on the urban areas. Okay? And in a way that exposes those who are going into college, not just computer science, but also other fields that are available online.
Right.
So the fact that it became so mainstream now, one of the questions now probably facing a student is, what will excite me on taking this course?
Yeah.
Kasi probably now the question would be, ano kaya yung course ko para makapag-abroad ako? mm-hmm. or something like that.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
See,
precisely.
Yeah. So yon. So I think it's a matter of.
It's a pang issue yon actually.
But anyway.
Yeah, that's another podcast.
Yeah. So by the way, anyway, yeah, that's always a lingering question. So we know for a fact that some things might change, but there are also some schools that are doing some changes, naman. But I think we should do ourselves. I mean, people in the industry.
Teach
also do our part as well on doing that. So anyway.
Yeah, so one thing I was wondering something though. If it would help that a course in college actually be taught by people in the industry. So for example, instead of just having professors teaching, software engineering in college, in computer science, instead of having a professor that has absolutely no experience doing software engineering,
it could be an elective.
Get some, actually, there's software engineering part of the computer science.
I see.
At least in UP and other. So if people can, if the educators would be open-minded enough to actually get a guest lecturer, or guest instructor from the outside in the industry, I think learning and teaching at the same time would be much more effective. Then yeah. I think that's just me.
Many people agree.
Yeah.
By the way, did anyone
just
go on, Mix?
Yeah, I was just saying that for many people, there are many people who would like to teach more, like myself. But the reality is, I mean, commercial realities are you can't afford.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to the history of the internet in the Philippines, did anyone actually get to read that Yahoo Nielsen Net Index study?
Oh, yes.
That was I actually found that on a blog. Okay. So I think it was released It was released a few days ago. It was actually by Yahoo and Nielsen. It was actually a study. They claim it was the first in-depth internet media study of urban Philippines internet users. Okay, so they had this sample size of 1,200 people.
That's a small sample.
But what they found out, key highlight.
Your staff teacher would spank you.
Okay, the area coverage was actually as National Urban Philippines. 22 major cities, including Metro Manila. Pero the sample size is only 1,200. But what they found out, yung key highlights nila was that 28% of Filipinos in National Urban Philippines have accessed the internet in the past month. 5% mm-hmm. access the internet every day.
Mm-hmm.
Another is Filipino internet users are likely to be below 29 years old. Ouch.
I'm below 29.
But here's the thing. Filipino internet users are more likely to be opinion leaders and early adopters compared to traditional media consumers. They tend to be individualistic, trend conscious, and willing to pay for quality products and are tech enthusiasts. Story of my life. Story of my life. The breakdown basically said that 50% were below 19.
Wow.
50% of users?
Yeah. And that internet cafes are an important internet access point. I wouldn't be surprised people were playing games.
Okay. But they're on the internet, you know? They're playing multiplayer online games.
This is
right?
interesting, okay? Internet cafe users, the percentage, section AB, ABC1. This is probably they probably put it on class. Section ABC1, 21% of them use the internet cafe. Section C2, 27%. And section DE, 81%.
Wow.
Meaning this section, just go to an internet cafe kasi baka walang computer sa bahay.
Right.
So, yun.
Alam mo.
And what are the common things that people do on this sample? Email, internet, messaging and search. This is bias. Yahoo is the dominant web-based email.
No, but it's true.
Yeah, but it's true. Yeah, internet messaging is. I thought it was search. Anyway, so Yahoo email, even if it was commissioned by Yahoo and Nielsen, because it's true. And 53% of this sample play online games.
Right. See, that's the main driver here in the Philippines.
They are likely to be below 30 years old and are males.
See, that's why I say it's a small sample size. Okay. It's really easy to go into internet cafes and find kids 20-odd people
playing Dota.
Right.
Yeah, so so they had this breakdown of activities that they do monthly. So, yun nga, 53% play online, 51% visited the social network. Interestingly, 42% read blogs.
Wow.
Okay. And only 3% purchase products online, and 3% conducted online banking transactions. So, there goes the sample.
So that's a problem with a 1,200 person sample. You're likely going to find these people. So it depends if you're looking at urban areas. How do you find people who are not in the internet cafe that are accessing the internet, right? So if you're going to
do something, how do you find people who are in the cafe who are not playing games?
Yes, or that. So, if you look at it, I would like to see a more comprehensive study.
I think the more appropriate spectrum is that they go to the internet cafes to play online.
Right.
Number two would be do IM, actually webcam chat.
Mm-hmm.
And number three, on the internet cafe, I think that's the two major ones. And number three would be the rest.
Will be research in school. So if your population is like, if it says majority of the people coming into the internet cafes are like 19 year olds and below, that will be children who don't have access to internet at home, but need to do research as well. So the easiest thing to do is get on Yahoo, check your mail, do your search from there. Although I think there will be other places where they can get information like Sightseer for the research projects and whatnot. So, but anyway, so I think that sample of 1,200 would be real small. So, granting that the Philippine population is also dominantly young being below 35. So,
one of three in Filipino internet users have a blog.
Really.
I don't believe that.
According to the sample.
Yeah, but you know,
If you count people in Friendster, right, who are actually okay, I can believe that now.
Yeah, so social networking is a key online activity. 51% claim to have visited a social networking site in the past month. One of three Filipino internet users have a blog. Friendster is the leading social network in the Philippines, which is not a surprise at all. But yeah, I think the sample is actually low. It reflects a part of what we have, but it's not an accurate spectrum of the Philippine internet landscape.
Wait, but if you're talking about urban areas, right? Then maybe I'd retract that one. 1,200 would be, I think that would be enough. In Manila, you have how many millions of people?
15 million, something like that.
Wow, so I think I'd like to see a study that has like 3,000 people. Better, that's a better representation.
Yeah, that would be a better percentage.
Yeah.
So.
But one in three, wow.
Bloggers. Well, I would wonder, I mean, the bloggers. Kasi kasama naman dyan yung bloggers na, you know, the emo kids who post lyrics on their blogs. So they wouldn't necessarily be the kinds of blogs that you're going to read regularly. So, I wouldn't be surprised. One third is a pretty pretty accurate in terms of absolute number.
I don't know. Migs, do you like the internet in the Philippines now than before?
Now? Well, yes, I do.
Hesitation. Okay.
Yeah, I like that we have Twitter now.
I like the I like the interactivity now.
Yeah, yeah, that's great.
It's very, very interactive.
I like the internet now because I think it can improve way, way more, and I want to be a part of it. So.
Yeah, yeah, here.
With that, we're another edition of Pinochak Podcast has finally come to a close. So before we close, let me reintroduce everyone again. We had Migs Paras. You can check out Migs' Twitter at mparas, and his site is at paras.com. And we also had John Limhap, and his Twitter is latex, L-A-T-T-E-X. And you can check out his blog at blog.cafenilatex.com.
Yeah, yeah, and my tech blog at, it's msdnphilippines.net/blog/limhap, L-I-M-J-A-P.
And finally, we had Dean Beres. You can check out Dean's Twitter at Mikhail Beres. And you can check out his website at www.deanberes.com. By the way, if you have any feedback about the podcast, just send us an email at feedback@pinoytechpodcast.com. We're also available on iTunes and in the Zoom Marketplace, by the way.
Wow.
Well,
give Microsoft some love, right?
Yep. I just don't have a Zoom.
No, neither do I. I don't have an iPod either. So
me neither.
So anyway, this is Jerome Butanco. You can check out my Twitter at Jerome Butanco, and my blog is at blog.butanco.com. Again, this is Pinoy Tech Podcast. See you in 2 weeks.